there, nerds. We're back. Dads, I am, of course, Jimmy, and with us, as always, we have Jason Applegate. Say hey, Jason.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Well, we have another week. We are episode 6. I want to apologize to all the people listening. I might be a little down in the dumps today. Today was the day the United States lost to Belgium in the World Cup 2-1. Not a happy camper, but I will plot on and I will be nerdy for everybody.
Isn't it still a pretty decent accomplishment? I mean, how many times, I think I heard, it hasn't been many that we've even made it to the elimination round.
Being from Cleveland, I am tired of making excuses, Jason Applegate. I'm not a Denver fan. I don't have trophies to hold up. I want to win.
I gotcha. I hear you.
Yes,
I hear you.
It's definitely an accomplishment. I think Klinsmann, our coach, did a fantastic job upping the expectations for this team. We came out of the group of death, which is typically reserved for the name, is reserved for the hardest group in the early rounds. We came out of it. We played very well against Belgium. We played a little timid, I thought, but we played well to keep it 2-1. We took them into double overtime, which is fantastic. It would be nice in my lifetime to have more wins, to go farther than we've ever been before. So,
yeah, it would be cool.
Anywho, that's nerdy stuff. That's for another day and a different topic. But what do we have today?
Well, I guess the latest news has been kind of Hulk-centered, at least from what we're going to talk about, in that Mark Ruffalo was asked about possibly doing Planet Hulk as the next solo Hulk movie. And he had responded that he didn't think that that would work because in Planet Hulk, he, it's just Hulk. He's not Bruce Banner. So the whole movie would be nothing but Hulk. And he felt like you still needed to kind of reestablish the character, I guess, for a third time. So I don't know. I had a couple of thoughts on that. My first is that, go, Ruffalo. Way to know your character, you know. It's nice to hear an actor who actually, you know, has read the stuff and he knew that, you know, what Planet Hulk was, and that's pretty encouraging. I don't know. What are your thoughts on a Planet Hulk movie?
I have a tough time with this because we've talked about it before. The Ang Lee, Eric Bana, who I love Eric Bana. Ang Lee, I back and forth with his movies, but I hated that movie. That was awful. Nick Nolte's character was awful. It was so stupid. I don't know how it got made. Thank God it got made, because then Universal sold the rights back to Marvel, and they're like, whatever, we don't want it. But then the Ed Norton version came out with Liv Tyler, and I thought that was fantastic. I thoroughly enjoyed that movie, but it didn't catch on, and I think part of the problem was that we were so close to the stupid Ang Lee Eric Bana version that people couldn't let that go, so they didn't care what Hulk movie came after that. Now that he's been introduced into the Avengers and we have a third actor playing the character, I think people, to be honest, I don't know, almost like a gunshot or a buckshot. They're trying to cover as much area as they can because they don't know what will work. And Planet Hulk was a hugely popular storyline, and I think fans and, gosh, maybe even Disney executives might be throwing that out. But I totally agree with Mark Ruffalo. On the flip side, I think the fans are just trying to look for something that could get Hulk popular.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the two things about Hulk that make him an interesting character is, one, he smashes things. You know, he busts things up how much destruction there was. No, you want destruction with the Hulk. The second thing that's interesting with him is the dichotomy, the idea that he's sort of a werewolf type of character. Like, it's a curse that he transforms into this Hulk. What we saw in the Avengers movie was that curse, he had control of it. He could change into the Hulk on demand. He didn't need to become angry. So I think it might be interesting to see, what that means and how he got there or further development with that. If he can change at will, that's a much more interesting concept that might make for an interesting film. So I don't know. I think I'd be either way.
That's one of my fears, is that if they go the Planet Hulk route, it's reaching into the gimmicks. So that, right, are we going as far as, okay, we'll get Hulk, the Red Hulk, which I think is dumb. Are we going to go even further and have, I believe currently where it's all Hulk, and then Bruce got shot in the head?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't like that either. So I'm afraid we're going with gimmick, and Planet Hulk is just such a popular storyline that that's the gimmick that comes up. On the flip side, we have, geez, I don't even know how old Hulk is, 60 years of Hulk to go from. So, yeah, Planet Hulk might be awesome, but we can also combine storylines so we can invent, we can have somehow have Bruce Banner in a Planet Hulk story. I don't
right.
know, but
well,
do this.
The other thing that they haven't yet done is the leader. You know, they reference him in the end of the second Hulk movie.
Oh, I was so excited by that, by the way.
Yeah. And then, you know, so maybe shouldn't they bring him into it at some point? I mean, I don't know if you can build a sequel off of it with a new actor or not. But I don't know. I think they can go a lot of different ways.
That's sort of the irony, is Tim Blake Nelson is going to be the villain in the new Fantastic Four movie, and he was the one that played the guy who could have been the leader, if that's where they were actually going. But it was interesting, because there did come a little nugget of news today, because Mark Ruffalo shot down, like you said, the news of a Planet Hulk movie, but news sort of leaked, and again, this could be a little bit of spoiler, so I don't want people to be offended, so if you don't want to hear this, fast forward about 30 seconds. But supposedly at the end of Age of Ultron, Hulk is, I don't know how or why, in space, on a trajectory that he cannot alter. So we kind of have to go where he's going. And they alluded to the fact that this could put him directly in line with the Guardians of the Galaxy sequel, not necessarily his own solo project.
Interesting. Really interesting.
So, yeah, that could put him along the lines of a Planet Hulk, obviously being in space and not, I don't know, I'm speculating, not welcomed on Earth at this point, but definitely. It definitely could be interesting.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, so we move on to our next topic of 1980s toys.
In the 80s? That's crazy.
What's that?
They made toys in the 80s? That's crazy.
I know, right? And they weren't just made of wood. We just played with wooden blocks and cardboard in the 1980s. No.
You know what's sad? I think my parents still have the wood blocks that I played with. But do they have any of the G.I. Joes or Star Wars? No.
No.
Wait till Mom and Dad. That's their parenting fail.
Nice. Way to call them out. Excellent job. we saw there was a little, you know, those top 10 kind of list things. This was 14. I don't know why they went with 14, but whatever. The 14 most BA toy lines of the 1980s, which I thought the most enjoyable part of it was watching the old advertisements. They were so hokey. They were great.
You have this memory as a child being like, oh man, those commercials were awesome. I really wanted that toy. And then you watch it as an adult, especially now with the technology, you're like, wow, that sucks.
Yeah, exactly. It was, they're pretty awful, but awful in a good way. So if you haven't seen them in a while, go YouTube it. You can find them, I'm sure. They're classic. But the first one that they list is He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. And I was shocked that it was number one, but it said in this article that it was the highest selling toy of the 1980s, and I'm guessing that's because pretty much Star Wars was done in the 1980s. But still, I was pleasantly surprised, because that was what I had more. I had more He-Man toys than anything else, which isn't saying a whole lot. But still, that was my go-to toy when I would save up my allowance. That's what I would go and get.
I definitely remember He-Man. Definitely remember the cartoon. I was not a big He-Man collector, but there was a kid on our block, Jonathan Craddock, who was, and he had, like, everything. So when we played, obviously played at his house, and I would get to play with that stuff. And, man, it was pretty amazing. Their toys, and now folks that are listening that are younger will see the toys today and be like, yeah, they're very articulate, and they're very well held together and all that. This was not the case in the 80s. In the 80s, you had G.I. Joe that had rubber bands connecting their legs. Once the rubber band broke, you lost a leg, and forget it, the toy was stupid. Or Star Wars, where you could bend an arm up and down, but forget an elbow, that was not happening. So, He-Man, to me, although they, again, weren't terribly articulate, they were pretty solid. And I remember certain characters being gimmicky is the wrong word because that's almost a negative connotation. But they were gimmicky in that they were fun. They did cool things. I don't remember the character's name, but you could pop off his hand and you could put in a sword or a knife or something cool like that, an axe. Another guy named, but he was sort of a robotic guy, and his jaw would flip up and back, and you could turn him around, and he was very robot-like, and it was really cool.
Yeah. The first one was Trapjaw. That's who you're talking about.
Yes,
he was a villain.
Yes.
And the second one, I'm not sure which one that one was, but yeah, they could do cool different things, and they were durable, heavily durable.
Yes.
Like, you could pop his arm off and just snap it right back on, no problem. So I like He-Man. They also had ridiculous names. I have to tell you, my two favorites, and I still have a lot of my He-Man from when I was a kid.
Nice.
I've kept them. Yeah, I even have a Castle Grayskull, which is pretty solid. I did not have Snake Mountain, though. Snake Mountain was out of our price range, so never got a hold of that one. It had, like, a voice changer you could talk into, so it was pretty hardcore for the 1980s, but my two favorite figures had to be Mossman and Skunkor, and they came with authentic smells, and I tell you, to this day, if I take Mossman out of the block, he will still smell like the evergreen tree. You could hang him from your car and have, get rid of the stench, right? And Skunkor still smells like a skunk. He just smells funky. So they have lasted even these 20-something years.
30? I don't even know how that happened.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even
want
to know how the hell they got that technology.
I wonder if there's some sort of, like, rating for the toy on that, if how much smell it has, like the CGC ratings, we can figure that out. But anyway, those were two of my sort of rarer figures that were prized possessions as a kid that you got to kick at. What kind of they need to bring that back, smelling toys that smell authentic. We need to get on that. There's some money to be made there, I think.
That's all you, sir. That is all you.
All right, I'll get right on that. Number two was Thundercats, which I always felt like was a He-Man ripoff, and I never really got into it. I thought it was kind of cool because I loved Lion-O's sword. I thought his sword was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But other than that, I just felt like they didn't really expand to more characters. Like He-Man, there were just a plethora of really interesting characters that they could do, and Thundercats just was kind of like the same guys, although maybe Chitara might have been my first, cartoon crush when I was a kid. I don't know. She was pretty interesting. But I think Teela could take her. So Princess Teela from the He-Man. But anyway, I've really gone nerd on us here.
That's weird. We'll get to that. I'll be honest. I did not have any Thundercat toys. I didn't even realize they had Thundercat toys. But I watched more of the cartoon of Thundercats than I did He-Man. And I will never forget I don't remember the character's name, because the gray dude, but he, out of nowhere, used the word reconnoiter. I'm going to go reconnoiter the area. And I'm, I don't know, how old, 8, 9? I'm like, huh, I wonder what that word means. So to this day, I know reconnoiter basically means to go canvas the area, search for things, explore, survey.
Huh.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, cool. You get
educational.
Exactly. And the other part, I felt Thundercats was more, and I don't know how true this is or not, was more of an import, because it always seemed like they were reusing, or cheaply made, maybe that's the best way to put it, because they're always using the same scenes over. Like Mumra, can we have somebody else as a villain instead of Mumra always calling upon whatever and attacking whatever? And it's like, geez, man, seems like it's the same exact clip every single time.
Yeah, I think that's true, too, from what I remember. Well, the next one brings us to the Superpowers collection, which was off of the Super Friends cartoon show. I think they had to call it a different name for some reason. But that was the one where I had a couple of those guys when I was a kid, but they were kind of hard to find. And so as an adult, now I've gone and collected as many of those as I can find. My newest collection was a Red Tornado, minus his cape, unfortunately. But, you find what you can find and go with it. But those guys were cool, and what made them unique was, like, their super action. I guess that's why they were called superpowers, because you would do things like you could squeeze their legs and Flash, his arms would go back and forth, and it would look like he was running. It was almost always squeezing their legs, and they would, like, throw a super punch or something. something unique and different. And, man, you want to talk about variety? Like, you name a DC character, and they probably have a superpower for that character, good and bad. So pretty
yeah.
cool.
That one, I think my parents lied to me a lot as a child because I watched Super Friends. I loved Super Friends. Until I saw that list, I didn't really know they had toys for it. Like, I'd see them at Comic Cons, but never really pay attention. I'm like, oh, yeah, cool. And then it clicked. I'm like, wait a minute. Those are Super Friend toys. My parents are liars.
You really are painting your parents a bad picture. Did they tell you they were taking you to the toy store and then you went to the dentist? Is this the kind
yes.
of parents you had going
my,
on here?
My parents are evil. Very evil. No, you'll hear a parenting win in here in a moment when we get to a later.
Okay, yes. Good. yeah, so very cool. Some of my prized possessions are, I do have the Batmobile from the Superpowers, which
nice.
I don't know this about me yet. I'm a huge Batman fan, so that's a nice one. And then one of my favorites that I thought was an awesome toy, almost as cool as the Spider Buggy, is the Superman car. Why Superman would need a car, I don't know, but they did make one, and you can get it. So there you go.
Nice.
Yeah. Number four is Mad Balls. And they were basically these ugly balls. I think they're kind of in the line with the Garbage Pail Kids. Like, for some reason, when we were kids, ugly, gross stuff was really popular.
Well, I remember Mad Balls, and I had some.
Did you?
I did. I remember. They were all squishy, and
yeah.
Were sort of nasty. I had one that was an eyeball that had, like, the Bane popping out all around.
Yes.
Yeah, I had that one. I'm sure I had more, but somehow I got those. I don't know why or how, but, yeah.
Yeah, I think I had one. I think an aunt or uncle got it for me because my parents were not a fan of it. Don't know what it had. It probably got in the yard sale pretty quickly. But, yeah, interesting one. I can't speak on that one. Did you have any of those ones?
Again, I think this one falls into I like the cartoon, but I also think it came a little later in the decade.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Like, I think it was beyond me necessarily collecting tons of toys. So I kind of saved the certain toys. So, yeah, I think I definitely missed the real Ghostbusters one. But like we touched on before, they had to call it the real Ghostbusters because, like, I don't know who owned the actual Ghostbusters. But
Yeah. Awesome. And then the next one is the Marvel's answer to the superpowers was Marvel's Secret Wars. What I found that was most interesting about that was the toy company got Marvel to do the series, the miniseries in their comic books for the Secret Wars, which is like a huge series. This is the one where Spider-Man gets his black costume for the first time. And
wow.
That was suggested by the toy company. Hey, we're going to do these toys, make a comic book called The Secret Wars to back up the toys. So what a great concept. And I don't know, did you have any of those?
I did not have any of those. Again, I actually didn't even watch that cartoon. I knew Spider-Man and his amazing friend. But
yeah.
I wasn't aware of the Secret Wars. But again, I'm not surprised that Marvel had no clue how to market their characters in movies and animations. Because they, 80s and 90s, man, they were awful with it. And thank goodness, I don't know who stepped in and fixed it, but thank goodness they did.
Yeah. I mean, aside from really the Incredible Hulk television series, you didn't really have much going on for Marvel at the time, which in hindsight might have been a good thing because they didn't really have the technology to do well. So, but yeah, some pretty cool ones. I mean, I remember having Spider-Man, and I did not have the black costume Spider-Man, and a Magneto and a Doctor Doom. And then I had a guy I didn't even know who he was, but it ended up, I know now, it's Kang the Conqueror. But at the time, I didn't know who he was, some purple guy, and I'm sure I got him at like a secondhand store or garage sale or something, and so it was just like, oh, cool. But they were pretty neat. They had shields with little, movable cards you put in there, so there would be, like, action on the shields and stuff. So
they
were
cool.
They were all right. Yeah.
That actually brought up a flashback from, this was more along the lines of the old, like, $6 Million Man action figures a little later. Somehow,
yeah.
I had a Spider-Man, quote-unquote, doll action figure, because it was more dollars than it was action figure, but from the TV show. I have no idea if I have that, or just when we were talking about it, all of a sudden I'm like, oh my God, I have a Spider-Man doll. It really was like a Ken doll with a Spider-Man on it, and his hands were red. because they did obviously have gloves or anything, so they just made it stand in. Yeah, wow, that was a great plan. I'll have to try to find that somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. Is it Amigo doll, do you know?
I honestly don't know. I mean, I haven't seen that in probably 10, 15, maybe 20 years. Like, when I moved out of my parents' house, that got put in a box somewhere, and I have no idea where it is.
Well, hopefully they didn't sell it along with the Star Wars
plan. Yeah, those parents. It's not a block. They would have sold it.
Those Migos are pretty cool, though, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. All right, and then the next one, of course, is Star Wars, which, again, I was surprised it wasn't number one, but I guess, you know, it's mostly a 70s toy, so you're looking at kind of the Return of the Jedi toys. And you had mentioned, yeah, didn't you, that they kind of didn't produce as many of those as they maybe should have? Or?
Well, the funny part is, with the first movie, obviously nobody had a clue how popular it would be. And we had touched on it, a couple companies had turned down the right to make the toy, and that's where Kenner stepped up, and Kenner made the original toys. And they had this deal, because they didn't have the toy made, where you could go into stores and you could buy the quote-unquote toy, but it was just a card, like a placard, that had the characters that you would get in it, and they would be shipped to you later. And I can't remember the famous name that they call that marketing deal. I can't remember. Well, that was so popular that they couldn't do it. They couldn't do the way they planned. Where you're like, huh, that's kind of funny. And it shows, again, Lucasfilm really being in the forefront of all this merchandise that they put. It's crazy. But, yeah, with that, it's rare to find one of the original Star Wars 1977 character releases. But with that, we have the 1980 Empire Strikes Back, 1983 Return of the Jedi. I will be honest, I have no idea when I first saw Star Wars, how I saw Star Wars, why I love it so much, and what into the toys so much, because I was, like you, born in 1977, the year it came out. I was born in June, it came out in May. So I'm not going to the first movie like that. But my parents have told me that I really, 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 really wanted a Millennium Falcon toys.
Mm-hmm.
And this is their parenting win. They got me a Millennium Falcon toy when I was probably 4. I have no idea.
Wow.
I can't imagine they took me to see Empire Strikes Back. Then again, maybe my parents were psycho. That was back before the days of PG-13. So they're like, yeah, let's take them to go see this happy movie, Star Wars. And obviously, it's a dark movie. But yeah, I still have that Millennium Falcon to this day. It is beat to hell. The stickers barely exist. It makes no noise anymore. But man, that is one of my pride and joys. I still have that Millennium Falcon. I know several of the characters too. Mainly just the Return of the Jedi. I have a couple of the re-release, meaning 1980 re-release, Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back originals. But yeah, I still have a couple of those left.
Does your Millennium Falcon still have the Force Ball that came with it?
I am unaware of any memory of a Force Ball.
So the answer to that is probably no. I just know that's like
that right away.
It's like a tiny, tiny little ball. You know, it's the one that Luke Skywalker, you know, swings his lightsaber around at the train. And it came with that in the Millennium Falcon. And then, of course, it was the first thing that the kids would lose. So now they're worth a lot. Like, they sell individually. For quite a bit. I mean, I haven't looked recently or anything, but I know that if you have a Force Ball or the Millennium Falcon with the Force Ball, it's quite a significant difference.
That's hilarious.
I thought it is funny. For Kenner's immobility of the figures, their vehicles were amazing. Just amazing.
I was bummed, and this is me being a petulant child. I always wanted the AT-AT, and I didn't get the AT-AT. I did have Luke's X-Wing, which I made a tri-wing. I don't know how I lost one of the wings or broke it off, but yeah. I was playing with Porky's X-Wing and not Luke's X-Wing. Who knows? but yeah, I had a bunch. I had, in fact, I still have the Cloud City spaceship, which is, to me, one of the lamest spaceships ever made, ever. And I did at one point have a Hoth speeder ship, but that has been lost in time. I don't know where that ended up.
Yeah, one of my favorites was the Tauntaun that I think you could actually stuff Luke inside it. Is that the case?
Yep. Yeah.
I'm not misremembering it.
No, it had like a trap door belly. And I don't know if Luke actually fit in there. Like, I never tried because I was Luke and never be able to get it out. Or my mom probably said that. But No, I remember that. Yeah, they had a little trap door belly that you could put to the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. I pretty much only had Ewoks. I had the tree. We had the tree. The tree fort thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. And then anything else we got was at a garage sale or something. So I did have a Darth Vader and an Obi-Wan and stuff like that that you picked up along the way. But Prune Face. I had Prune Face as well.
So did I. I still have him. That's awesome.
Yeah. I think everybody had Prune Face.
I think so. And for some reason, I had some of the most random characters. Like, I had General Nadine. It's like, I guarantee most people are like, who is General Nadine? I'm like, that's who I had. I had the band in Jabba's Hutt. I don't know why. I did. And I had Lando Calrissian in his little outfit in Jabba's Hutt, where he was a bounty hunter.
Nice.
Yeah, I remember playing with that on our wood pile in Medina, Ohio, and I lost my helmet, and I had to wait all winter for things to thaw and dry and whatever, and I still never thought.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
My goodness. Well, and then that was one. Wasn't the Boba Fett figure one of the first mail-in figures, too, and that's why it's such a rare thing? Or am I misremembering that?
You got me. I don't know.
I thought it was. I know one thing about it is it used to launch his rocket, like he could launch a rocket out of his back, and they had to recall it because kids were shooting each other in the eye with it.
That's why that was so rare, because I remember being at a show, and they had, I was a kid, and they had the non-shooting one where it was actually glued, the missile was glued back in, so you couldn't shoot it out, and that's the one I bought because I was, I love Boba Fett. I think it's amazing. But I remember the collector at the time telling me, even back then, how that was such a rare thing.
Yeah, well, and if you collect toys, like I do, you owe it to Star Wars because they really made it a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's with these weird things, like Yoda with an orange snake is like worth more than Yoda with a green snake. It's just, it's almost absurd. No, it is absurd, not even almost. But that's what makes toys valuable now, which is kind of cool. Next is G.I. Joe. G.I. Joe, a real American hero, not to be confused with the Barbie-sized G.I. Joes that really date back to the first toys that were dolls, of course called action figures, that were designed towards boys. But the real American heroes were about Star Wars size, but more articulated. Good or bad, though? I mean, what did you think? Did the articulation, was that a cool thing, or was it more of a pain in the butt?
Well, that's where it started out cool, because then they had cool vehicles as well, and then you could they had the little holes in the heels, so you could plant them on their ships and stuff at the spike points or whatever, and you could put cool poses, and they had guns and stuff like that. But the problem was, like I said earlier, they were not awesomely put together, because they would have like rubber bands holding the legs together where their hips are, and then they had like little almost like not even as strong as paper clips, holding some of their arms and knees together, elbows and knees together. So once those broke, you had a useless G.I. Joe, the real American hero figure.
Yeah, well, he was collecting his pay for, being wounded, which I shouldn't joke about that. But a pretty cool toy. Didn't have a lot of those. Again, my parents didn't let me watch G.I. Joe. They thought it was too violent. Died in it, but
I was like, that's the irony. They never hit their mark.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I did have the blue jet. I loved that thing.
Oh, that's
because
cool.
Because the wings tilted on it, and it was like, so it could like hovercraft kind of, take off straight up and then launch forward. And the pilot was pretty cool. And I remember having him, be sort of like a red stormtrooper when I would play Star Wars and stuff as well. So, definitely a toy of the 80s. I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there are, being nostalgic about some of the stuff that they had.
Yeah.
Very cool. The next one is My Pet Monster. I think we could probably just skip that one because both of us are like, kind of repressed that even existed. But this one, you couldn't find. Dino Riders is the next one. Dino Riders. What a great concept to give these dinosaurs armor and launch missiles off them and you can ride them. Like, what kid in the 1980s didn't dream of riding a Tyrannosaurus Rex with a missile launcher on it? I don't know.
I don't really have much memory of this. I don't know. Did it come from a cartoon or was it all its own? I don't know this one.
It was, I think it was just a toy. I think if it was a cartoon, it didn't do well. And I don't think the toy did well either because they just didn't make enough of them and didn't didn't push it, I think, hard enough. And maybe it was too costly. I did read that the dinosaurs for at the time were pretty anatomically correct, and they were actually designed from the same models that the Smithsonian used for dinosaurs. So maybe that was it. Maybe it was the cost of them. I don't know. Or it just might be one of those things that, like, what a cool idea that just didn't quite get traction.
Well, that's the irony. If they'd waited 10 years, then you'd have Jurassic Park. And I remember more of the sequel toys where you had, like, people riding the dinosaurs and stuff like that.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah, because you did that with the first one. You know, you put whoever you want on there and ride that dinosaur, man. Why wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. 11, Food Fighters. I think we can skip that one. Did you have any of those? It was like food that tastes. I didn't even realize that existed.
I maybe remember a commercial or something, but I didn't have any of those. I don't really remember anybody else having them.
Yeah, yeah. And then we talked briefly about this last week, but Mask, which I don't even remember what it stood for because it was an acronym. But yeah, they were cool. They were toys, cars, and vehicles that would change into other vehicles. So they weren't Transformers. They didn't change into robots, but like the car would have wings that would pop out, and then it could fly. Well, what kid, when they were, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, didn't pretend like their dad's car could pop out wings and start flying? You know, what a great, simple but cool concept.
And again, I don't know if this one was the cartoon came because of the toys or the toys came because of the cartoon, but I remember, you nerds out there, go and on a YouTube, just search Masked M.A.S.K. opening, because the opening of that was awesome, and the show was cool because you have something happen, and then whatever headquarters would put together a team that would best be suited to go take on whatever was going on, and
right.
I'm sure it's the same characters every time, and my memory is making it cooler than it was, but it was so cool because they would call in these guys, and then they would literally put on their mask, which was basically a helmet, and go and do whatever their specialty was, and man, it was awesome. Like I said, though, it's probably my memory versus what actually happened.
Well, it must have been awesome enough because they have parodied it on Robot Chicken. Which, yeah. I always wonder about, you know, young people who watch Robot Chicken and, like, do they think it's as funny as we do? Because obviously Seth Green grew up when we did because he parodies all our stuff all the time, He-Man and Super Friends and the rest of it. I always wonder how much they actually get it. And then the next, we'll finish off, the last two are Michael Bay productions with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Transformers. So we talked a little bit about Transformers last week and how they were pretty awesome toys, but they lasted about 2 weeks before you broke something trying to transform them. And a little bit about Ninja Turtles, but any more that you want to give a shout-out to on those, particular figure maybe or toy that you had or thought was awesome?
No, I think along the lines of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I think that, again, that one came a little later in the decade. Because I remember my little cousin, who's about 10 years younger than me, he had and loved Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I liked the movies and all, and the video game was awesome. But I never collected them. It just didn't seem like it was in my area of interest at the time.
Right.
Now, Transformers, I definitely had. And here's I'm not going to say it's a parenting fail because they tried. But I had GoBot. And GoBots were clearly we're going to beat the Transformers to the market and we're going to produce a crappy product. Here's GoBots.
Yeah. They were the poor man's Transformer. Yeah.
And that's what I had. So,
me too.
I was finally able to get a Transformer in like I had a Dinobot. You talked about it last week and somebody called us out on, I can't remember what the name of the T-Rex one is, but I had that guy.
Grimlock, yeah.
I had Grimlock, and then I had, further down the line, they did, like, Transformers that could do three things.
Ooh.
And I had one that was a jet, a tank, and then the robot. A train, a space shuttle, and the robot. So those were cool, but again, like I said, I clearly got into that a little later than I wanted to. And Michael Bay, Hopes and Dreams.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I always remembered that the rich kids at our school had the Transformers. They were expensive, man. Like, I mean, you wanted you could get the whole set of the dinosaur one instead of getting them individually. And I remember one of my friends had that. and the whole set of the construction ones that turned into giant robot that was like half your height, you know?
I was
happy to get Voltron when I got Voltron, the lions together into that guy. But yeah, definitely an 80s toy. And for those of you who are maybe younger listeners and aren't like getting how excited we are about this, you know what? You think about how you feel about the Power Rangers, okay?
Yeah.
Because if you think that what we're talking about is lame, that's what everybody else thinks about Power Rangers. They're lame to everybody else but you. You love the Power Rangers because they were a part of your childhood, and that's what makes them so cool and important to you.
Well,
whereas to us, it's a you know, Voltron ripoff, really. But
there you go.
Each his own.
Voltron was amazing. And then I remember seeing the first Power Rangers episode or something. And
yes.
I'm like, what the hell is this? This is Voltron. And, like, nobody got it. Nobody understood that. I'm like, wow, you guys are pathetic. But I do want to give a shout-out to our female listeners, both younger. Cabbage Patch Dolls were huge. Freaking huge. I think it was 85 or 86.
Yes.
My dad and I went up to Children's Palace. I don't know how he got one, but he got one. And I have two sisters. I'll let you do the math on how that worked out. It was not pretty. I had to make up for it later with a couple dolls for my youngest sister. My Little Pony, which has made a huge comeback. That was huge, my sisters. Obviously, Barbie.
Rainbow Bright.
Rainbow Bright.
Good Strawberry Shortcake, too.
There's one more that I just had on the tip of my tongue, and I can't remember.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. That's just starting to come back to, Care Bears. Care Bears were.
I saw a
recent animation on Netflix with them, and I'm like, man, that's crazy.
That is crazy. You know, what's interesting about Care Bears, I'm full of all this kind of useless information about toys, is they were specifically designed for underprivileged kids. And so that was why they would have sort of the thing on their stomach, and it would, you know, it was all about, like, inducing good feelings and positive reinforcement and so forth. And they were pretty cheaply made, and you could get them pretty cheaply. So just a little tidbit for y'all.
That is
cool. Well, I think we covered 80s toys. I'm super glad that you went the other gender, because you're right, that article that we looked at, they were all male toys. So definitely there were some pretty awesome female toys that came out in the 1980s as well. All of which, I think, as you were listing them off, I'm like, yep, Robot Chicken parodied all those as well.
Yeah.
So,
well,
that's
one of the things I want to clear this up to our listeners. You had a brother. I had two sisters, so I got to experience all those wonderful toys.
I was
not collecting My Little Pony or Cabbage Patch Dolls or anything like that.
Right, right. You didn't did make Cabbage Patch Dolls for boys, though.
They do,
they
and
did.
I remember a commercial where you could take your Cabbage Patch Doll into your dentist and they would put braces on them. And
wow.
That's so weird.
That's got to be, you know what, that rich kid friend that I talked to you about that had all the cool, you know, so he had all the cool Star Wars and all the Transformers and all the G.I. Joes you could name.
Yeah.
He also had a Cabbage Patch Kid. So,
wow.
So there.
That's
funny.
Well,
that
kind of leads into something that we said we wanted to touch upon. And I want to make sure when I said I didn't play with the girl toys, there's nothing wrong with that. You had brought up a topic that is, I think, close to both of our hearts because we have kids, was the bullying. The little girl who loves Star Wars.
Yeah, it was a great, great article that that we both saw on Facebook. A friend of ours actually tagged us in it because he knew we would appreciate it, where this young girl, I think she was age 11, was being made fun of at school because she had a Star Wars backpack, was it?
Yep.
Or was a Star Wars fan, anyway.
It might have been a lunch bag or something. I can't remember.
And it was a shame that was happening. Well, the 501st Legion, which if you don't know what that is basically like this club of authentic costume cosplayers that they build these costumes, and like to be a member of this, they have to be like movie authentic. I know a guy who's in it, and he's a Darth Vader, and he's like the Darth Vader from Empire Strikes Back, which is different than the Darth Vader from, you know, A New Hope. Like it's a different costume, and so you have to have everything right. You can't have the chain from one movie and the mask from another. It has to all be. So, I mean, these guys take it seriously. Well, they're also a great group of people because they do all kinds of charity work and stuff. So if you're not a fan of them, be one. Follow them. you know, like them, do that kind of stuff. But what they did here was they made a stormtrooper costume for this young lady who was being bullied so that she could be a stormtrooper for Halloween. So you know it was an awesome costume. And if you look it up, you can see pictures of it. And it was really, really cool thing to do and was great to see. And then you want to cover part two of the story, what she ended up doing with it afterwards?
Sure. Well, as you know, all 11-year-old girls grow up and get bigger and outgrow the costume or the clothes that they were fitting in. So she no longer fit into this stormtrooper outfit that the 501st made her. And it was sort of perplexed on what to do with it, because she clearly loved it. I mean, from reading the story and listening to the interview with her mom, she wore it to everything. And it's like,
that's
that
awesome.
Is so cool. So she didn't know what to do with it, quite what to do with it. So her mom had seen another article or story, I believe it was on the news, where a girl was being picked on for liking Star Wars. So it was very cool. This little girl, I wish I could remember her name, but I don't remember off the top of my head. She decided to give her uniform to this other little girl so that she could wear it proud and basically join the sort of honorarily join this 501st so that they could then fit into a group that would welcome them and accept them and not have any judgments against them because of their love of Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome. You know what, and if you can we put that, like a link to that article on our Facebook page so people that are interested in it can read it and they can find out who this girl was and all that stuff?
Sure, we'll put it on the NerdLocker page where this will play so that they can all see it. Because I think
perfect.
We did post it. But
did you?
Yeah,
okay, cool.
You guys know, the 501st is so cool. They are a nonprofit group. They don't go out to make money at these shows.
No.
They work closely. The group here in Vegas worked closely with Maximum Comics a lot of time. And
cool.
What they ask for to show up is a donation to one of their charities. And it's very cool because you look at the time and commitment that they put in, not only to their costume, but to show up to these events. They stay for hours. They take any picture you want. Usually the most popular picture is stormtroopers arresting, quote unquote, arresting somebody on their hands and knees. I don't know why most of the 501st is stormtroopers and Darth Vader, but they have expanded. Yes, I know 501st refers to the stormtrooper squadron, but they have expanded to include a lot of Jedi, which you'll appreciate this. A lot of people now with the prequels will be the young Jedi, and they'll be
cool.
The younger generation of Jedi. And it's like, it's so weird to me because it's like, these people didn't exist when I was growing up. I don't know who that character is. Okay.
Yeah.
It's so weird to me. But, yeah, the 501st is a great organization. They really help this little girl out, and they step up to all sorts of things. And it amazes me in this day and age that somebody would pick on somebody else for, one, loving Star Wars, because to me that's, like, so popular. How do you pick on someone loving Star Wars, girl or boy? I don't care. But
so
you have people, the other similar story is the boy, I think it was West Virginia, who had a My Little Pony bag.
Yeah.
And he went to a backpack and went to school and got bullied. And then the school's best solution was, yeah, don't wear that bag to school anymore.
Yeah, yeah, typical. Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, I mean, gender biases and those kinds of ideas, they don't die down because people, you know, get these ideas stuck in their head. And when you look at toys, they're very gender specific too. I mean, go to your local store and you can tell from about 50 yards away which are the girl aisles and which are the boy aisles. And so those lines are kind of strictly divided right from their beginning. But you know what? The 501st is just an example of how nerds can be some of the coolest people because we can be some of the most accepting people. And the 501st, you know, show that. And I know it hit close home to me because, you know, my daughter's nerdy and into that kind of stuff too. And she had just literally been at a dance recital where she was made fun of because her water bottle was Iron Man. And that's not a girl water bottle. Why are you drinking out of it? And she was like, she didn't want to bring the same water bottle back, you know?
Oh,
and
man.
It's like, really? Why? So, you know, I gave her a Wonder Woman one and I'm like, here, now you can still be nerdy. And those kids that don't know anything, you know, it doesn't matter. But, you know, one of my proudest moments was when my daughter was in the back seat and we were coming home from the Motor City Comic Con. And she says to me, "You're a nerd?" And I said, "Yeah, honey, you're a nerd." And she's like, "Awesome." You know, so it's cool that being a nerd now is cool. That it's become a cool thing to be a nerd. And that both my kids are proud of being nerds, which is pretty cool.
That is awesome. And I want to point out that we are not in any way comparing it to being like gay or any ethnicity or anything, any minority or anything like that. But it truly is. When we grew up in the 80s, being a nerd was not something you promoted. You were picked on a lot of times. And it wasn't by, like, girls and boys picking on you because you liked something that was not a traditional gender role. It was you were picked because you liked something nerdy. And today, and you're right. It's great to hear, cool, I'm a nerd. I love it. And that was the whole point of us starting Nerd Locker, is to make being nerdy cool. And I am shocked how people still come at us with, I refuse to support Nerd Locker because you use the term nerd, and that's a negative way to look at us. And I'm like, no. We're bringing nerd and making it cool. I don't care who you are. We're trying to make the term nerd cool so you can be a nerd and you can be comfortable with yourself, because that's what we are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And my son wants to write for Nerd Locker. He just told me this today. Yeah, he was saying,
awesome.
You know, when I get old enough, I wanna submit to Nerd Locker. And I'm like, all right, dude, you got it. I'm sure you're more than welcome to. So
I have been waiting for a good Applegate writer for a long time. So
right,
when Kay's ready, you get him in the game.
awesome. All right. So let's move on to our recommendations, I think, is what we're up to next, right? So let's start with the family recommendations, since we're kind of on that family feel right now. What are our family recommendations, nerdy recommendations for the family?
Well, my first up is one that I did not grow up with. It barely misses, I think, but it is definitely a huge thing. And nerds that are slightly younger than us have picked it up and run with it, and it doesn't seem to die, although there's one part of me that wishes it would, but it has been very good for my son and daughter, is Pokemon. I have tried for years to hide the cartoon. They finally found it on Netflix, and they absolutely love it. They have now gone full bore into it. They have cards. I just got them their first video game. They love it.
Oh.
And it's cool, because at first I really did rage against it, because I'm like, oh, my God, this is unbelievable. But what the nice thing was, I've done a couple battles with my son, who's 8, and I'm sure we're doing it wrong, but it's nice because he sees the cards, we do the battle, and he's doing math in his head to subtract the hit points or whatever it's called,
awesome.
So that he's doing math while he's also learning these facts, and he's learning a little bit about nature and whatever these element powers are that these Pokemon have, and getting a little patience, because you have to be a trainer and you have to train the Pokemon to do certain things. So it really has turned in to be more than just this silly card game that I saw it as. It's become a cool thing that I would recommend to any parent to look into Pokemon. It does teach your child to take care of their possessions, because the cards you want to trade with your friends, and if you beat them up, then nobody's going to want it. So it really does. It's got a lot of the good things going for it. So I do. I recommend Pokemon.
Cool. Yeah. Mine's along the same lines, in that it is also a game. And it is a game from, I think it was released in 1992. But I did look it up today. You can still find it on eBay if you want to. And you can also find it on Amazon, but it was like $85, so I don't suggest getting it from there. Put a bin in on a used one from eBay. But it's called X-Men Alert. Mm-hmm. X-Men Alert. It's a really cool game that is one of the first ones I could play with my kids, but it is very strategy-based. And like with Pokemon, I feel like, you know, my son has learned a lot about strategy with this game. What you do is you build a team. You start with 2 X-Men characters, and you battle evil mutants, and they have varying levels of difficulty, like how many spaces you have to go to beat them. The entire game, you come across getting new players. And then you also have cards that, instead of a villain coming up to battle, if it's a recruit card, and you try to recruit a new X-Men. So that's how you can get your team bigger, and you can get a total number of 4. And it's got all your great classic characters, Wolverine, Cyclops, Storm, and all the rest, and your awesome X-Men villains that you battle. And, you know, you learn your strategies. Each character has different powers that work different ways. So you have to figure out who's going to lead your team. And if, once you have four, are you going to split your team up or keep them all together? And all kinds of cool stuff. We love that game so much that we've actually worn the dice off. Like, the stickers on the dice are no longer on there. And we've had a Sharpie on. That we know which
funny.
Color means how many points and whether you get an evil mutant hit and the rest. But we love it so much, and my dad played it with me and my brother when we were younger. So it's cool to see three generations of Applegates playing the X-Men Alert game, and we all get a huge kick out of it. And you mentioned patience. And another thing that I feel kids learn that's important besides patience is also how to win and how to lose. And my son...
Yeah.
I am super proud of him for that, because he has definitely learned both of those things, how to gracefully win and how to not be, you know, a bad sport when you lose, which
mm-hmm.
is tough for kids to learn, especially
yeah.
when they care about something and they love it so much. To lose at it is difficult to deal with. So it's an important lesson there as well. So that's my recommendation. If you can get a hold of it, X-Men Alert. I've played it so much, too. We've actually invented our own characters and made their own cards and new villains and everything. I mean, we go all crazy with it. So check
that,
it out. See if you can find it. It's definitely
that is awesome. I believe. Now, again, we're moving, so everything's back up. But I believe I have it.
Do you really?
I believe I have that board game. And I believe it was an Applegate-influenced purchase, or maybe
even
you got it for me way back in high school.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
See, I can be a good influence. I'm going to have to tell my wife this.
You
yes, got to bust
can.
That baby out when you move, and if you get tired of the character that you're already playing with, just so you know, you just let me know, and I have the new characters that we've made for it, and I will send
funny.
Them to you as a PDF. You can print them up on your cardstock paper and be all set to go with additional characters.
We'll have to do that, because it's one of those ones that sits with my Star Wars collectible toys, board games, and the kids
yeah.
are, yeah, I want to play that. I'm like, no, you're not getting your fingers on that. No.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
old.
We had already played with it, so it was not off limits.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. I like that.
Cool. All right, on to our Nerd Cave, the adults-only recommendation. So you want to start off with that one, too?
Sure. This is definitely, you make sure the kids are in bed and nowhere near your TV. Huge fan of the character Deadpool. I have followed him from the beginning when Rob Liefeld created him. Yes, I am well aware he's basically just a copy of Deathstroke. I don't care. I love Deadpool. He has evolved into something that is nothing what he was originally, which is basically good. I think it's funny how he's evolved, and I love him. I think that's great. But his video game, which came out, I think, about a year ago, is amazing in that they were able to capture the essence of Deadpool and all his glory in a very, very R-rated form. And it's just a joy to play. Some of the controllability is not great. Some of the levels aren't great. But his interaction with, like, Wolverine, Cable, who's my favorite, he's just such a smartass, and it comes across in the video game so perfectly. I highly recommend you get it. I have it for a PS3. I'm sure it's on all the platforms you can possibly imagine. That's what I recommend, because it's funny, it's hilarious, it's awesome. It is fun to play, although sometimes it's hard, but yeah, it's like reading the comic book, but yet you're just watching it on screen. And since we don't have a really good Deadpool movie yet, this is the closest they've come.
Cool. Yeah, I've always kind of had that on my list. I'm not a huge video game player because, as you know, as adults, we just don't have quite the time, especially with kids.
Nope.
It's bad.
Yeah.
But it's definitely on my list. I'll have to check that out. Well, my Nerd Cave recommendation, adults only, is a movie that we got to see, the wife and I did. So you'd have to get a babysitter. It's still out in theaters now, but maybe even if you wait till it comes out on DVD, is the movie Chef by John Fox. And it has Scarlett Johansson, it has John Leguizamo, it has Robert Downey Jr. even has a small part in it. and it is just a joy to watch them just sort of have fun on film. And it makes you jealous. Like, man, why can't I make cool movies like this with my friends? Because they just, you can tell they're just having a great time. But it really was both a funny movie, but also a heartwarming movie about family and about being a dad. Favreau's character is this chef who goes through kind of a rough time, and he's trying to connect with his son, and you can tell his son wants to spend time with him, and they end up being able to do that when he gets fired from his job and has to get a food truck, and they drive it back from Florida to California along the way, and they bond as they go. And it's really, really funny and really heart-wrenching, too, in a good way. And what I loved, I think, most about it, and my wife pointed this out, so I'll give her props for it, is that it ended happily, which a lot of times when you have especially a couple that's divorced, it's sort of like, well, that's just how it is, you know, and it's like it doesn't give you that ending that you kind of hope for and want, and this one does reward the audience, I feel, and I thought that was a big strength. So give it a shot if you
awesome
can.
We have two or three reviews of it on nerdlocker.com, and everybody who's seen it loves it. Everybody.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
Yeah. I don't see how you couldn't. Great writing, great acting, just an awesome, awesome movie. I mean, just to see Robert Downey Jr.'s cameo is worth the entire film anyway. But it's a good movie all the way around. Cool.
Cool.
Let's move on to our parenting wins and fails. And as usual, we start with the bad. We'll start with our fails. And then we'll go on to our wins. So, all right, who's going to bite the bullet on this one? You want me to go, or you want to take it?
Sure. Why don't you step up to the plate?
Okay, mine goes back. I'm actually visiting my parents right now in Iowa. They live there, so I'm all over the place. But so I asked my dad, what should I do for a parenting fail? And he told me about a parenting fail that actually happened when I was a kid. So I don't know if this is like either take it as a prequel to my failures as an adult or take it as maybe my parents' parenting fail. But it ties into what we've talked about a little bit today, and that's Star Wars. We were over at a friend's house, and we were playing Star Wars. And, of course, I was Han Solo, so because he's the coolest guy in Star Wars, in my opinion. We decided that we were going to use my dad's 1970-something Mustang as the Millennium Falcon. Yeah. So my brother decides that it's a cool idea to go ahead and put the Mustang into gear. And in the 1970s, they did not make safety devices that kept you from putting the car into gear when it is off. And so he put it into gear, and we are of the age of maybe 10 and 7, and so we don't know anything about how a car actually operates. And if we would have just firmly placed our foot on the brake, it would have stopped. But the car began to roll, which was funny for the first time, and then we would, you know, it would sort of stop. But then there was a hill, and the car went down the hill, and I bailed on the car, very Dukes of Hazzard style, just opened the door and jumped out, which in hindsight was the worst possible thing I could have done, is to leave the vehicle as it's moving, right? And I'm yelling to my brother, get out of the car, you know, which was a terrible thing to yell to him, but I didn't know at the time. You know, something bad goes on as a kid, and you just bolt, right? It's like when the kid falls and gets hurt, everyone looks around and then runs. And that's what it was there. Well, the car went down the hill, and it hit like a brand-new truck. A parked truck. So it didn't. No one was hurt. Nothing. Thankfully, nothing bad happened there. But certainly, a failure on maybe multiple people's part, but I think I, as the older brother, I bear the brunt of the responsibility there. But a funny story to go back on, and my dad and I laughed about it a lot. It was definitely a moment worth remembering, and definitely one reason why I do not let my kids play in the front seat, even when they were little. Play with the steering wheel, because I'm like, no, Daddy has bad memories about that. So on to you, sir. Parenting fail.
Well, I would like to agree with you that there were no safety standards in the 70s or 80s. So, you know, even the little button you have on the shift now, not even a stick shift, just on the regular shifter, didn't exist back then. It was, yep, you're in gear, go do what you want. You could have kids in the front seat. I remember we had a silver station wagon. I'd sit in the front seat, and my mom told me to put my seatbelt on or something. Then I didn't. She stopped fast, and I, bam, hit the dashboard. And she's like, see, I told you so. And it's like, yep, I did. That's
how did we survive? How did we survive?
I don't know. But maybe this is why I have a parenting fail this week, because I don't learn no mistakes. We were at a pool. It's 114 degrees here in Vegas, so being at a pool is key. It was a family pool, so I was throwing my children into the pool, and they were loving it. And I got a little ambitious and threw my son too high, too hard, and he landed on his back.
Oh.
So once you hear that noise, you're like, oh, man. Then you feel like the biggest heel in the world because you just caused your child, and that's like the one thing as a parent you do not want to do. So, like, your goal in life is to prevent any pain happening to your child. So you're like, oh my God, you know, I jumped in right away. I got him up, with, you know, trying to rub his back, which I'm sure didn't help because that was a poor thing. And he was really upset. And I'm like, I know. So he sat out for a little while. But then we're now back into a different pool, and I'm in the pool this time thinking, I'm not that big and strong. I can't hurt my children. I'm throwing them in the pool, into the pool. So it's not like they're going to get very high. Well, cut to my 5-year-old daughter, who weighs a lot less than my 8-year-old son. And I do the same exact thing. She sort of slipped out of my hand as I was pushing her. She is trying to catch herself as she's flailing in the air. And, of course, lands flat on her back. Bam!
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, my God, this is, wow. And, of course, it's my little girl, so she comes up just screaming in pain and all the sorts of agony. Daddy, why would you hurt me? And I'm like,
oh no.
As if I didn't feel bad enough. And you know what it's like having a daughter. You're just like, oh, my God, there goes my princess, and I just did that. So, my parenting fail, I shall not throw children into water anymore. I'm clearly not good at that at all.
Off limits now.
Yes.
No matter
it is. And of course I got the I told you so from my wife, so that made it all the much better.
Yeah. I've been there for certain. All right, let's move on then. Let's put that behind us. Parenting wins. What are our parenting wins? Do you want to go first or you want me to?
You go ahead, man.
Okay, I don't know if you can hear that bullfrog. There's a bullfrog in the background going crazy right now. The parenting win for me is, I just slipped my mind. Why don't you go? Because it just totally slipped my mind what my parenting win was.
Okay.
The bullfrog threw me off, I guess. Go for it, please.
This past week, every once in a while, I will just take a special weekend and pick a day, and I'll have a man venture with my son. And it's nothing terribly special. It's just us going running errands, essentially. But you use man venture instead of errands, and all of a sudden your son wants to go with you. So that's my way of getting him to come with me. And this week we did the typical errands, doing what we had to go pick up or whatever. But we added a little mix. We went to 7-Eleven. And got a Slurpee. Again, it's super hot out here, so Slurpees are key. Got my dog, teaching him the manly way to have lunch. And then we stopped in at a GameStop, and like I talked about earlier with Pokemon, I let him pick out his first Pokemon video game, first 3DS. So the man venture was a success. I'm a big fan of doing this. We referenced a little earlier, earlier episode, I mean, where saw a video of a man taking his little daughter on a date, which I felt very cool, so I'm going to start that. But this one was the other version where I take my son out. We just have a blast. We just bond and do stupid guy things that you really do. You have to teach your son how to be dumb guy and just do silly things. And it's okay to do silly things. So I had a great time doing that man venture on Saturday.
Cool. Yeah. I think all our parents know that having some one-on-one time, if you have multiple kids, is awesome. You got to make time for that, for sure. Cool. Yeah, mine is, thank you for letting me get to my notes.
No problem.
is I got my son. We, as I said, we went to Iowa, so we were on a road trip that was about 7 hours long. So we always get them something to kind of entertain them for the road, something new. So I got my son a Marvel encyclopedia, which he had been asking for and asking for. And Daddy has a DC one that he's only allowed to look at every now and then and stuff. So I got him his own, right? I got him his own Marvel superhero encyclopedia. And
very cool.
Yeah, he was super excited about it, loved it. I'm sure in a matter of 3 days he will know more about Marvel superheroes than I ever knew, because he just soaked it in like a sponge. And certainly from a parent's perspective in that, he was quite quiet for the ride out here and did not once harass his sister and antagonize his sister, which was, you know, I have to admit, part of the plan. But still, I feel parenting went all around.
That definitely is. I've been through Iowa. I feel bad that you have to go visit Iowa. I'm glad that your parents are there and all that. But
oh my god,
that is. Everybody makes a joke that driving through Ohio is cornfield. Oh my god, driving through Iowa was flat cornfield, nothing. I couldn't believe it. So,
I like Iowa. I like Iowa. Well, my parents, they live right on the Mississippi too, so it's really right across the border from Illinois.
You're making excuses, too.
Hey, I used to have to drive through Nebraska, so there's nothing that compares to driving through Nebraska.
Well, it just occurred to me that anytime you can get out of Michigan is a good deal. So,
Getting to Iowa is okay. Yeah. People don't know this probably, but I live in Michigan, and I used to live in Ohio, and Jimmy's from Ohio, and people from Michigan hate Ohio. And people from Ohio hate Michigan. It's this weird thing. It's just, but I guess I shouldn't be surprised, because I hate Nebraska and I'm originally from Colorado.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. So cool. Well, good episode 6, man.
I think so.
Sweet.
I think so. Well, cool. Well, we will be back next week with episode 7. So stay tuned. Again, as always, please send us any questions, comments, concerns, especially those parenting fails, to info@nerdlocker.com. Visit us at nerdlocker.com. Hit us up on Facebook, on Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, all with the extension Nerdlocker. Until episode 7 next week, take it easy.